Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard a pour, you heard a fizz. It's going to be
great. I'm going to pop the top live.
Yes, pop those tops.
I'm going to pop it.
While Amy's popping bottles over there, I'm Kimberly Adams, and welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense.
And I'm Amy Scott. Thank you to everyone for joining us on this Friday for Economics on Tap, whether you're on the YouTube live stream or listening to the podcast.
Yes, yes, yes. And we are going to do the news. We're going to play a game of this or that. But first, we got to get to the drinks. Amy, what are you drinking?
I am drinking a canned cocktail today. It is a cocktail in a can kind of day. This is a ranch water, which is kind of like almost like a skinny margarita. It's seltzer or, you know, sparkling water and tequila and lime. Very simple, very delightful, I must say.
Sounds refreshing. Let's see.
And I'm just too lazy to make my own, so how about you?
So my drink, if you've never heard of this one, so I'm having a mocktail today. So for people who don't know, it happens to be for Muslims the holy month of Ramadan. So lots of people are fasting and having a great time with family and doing community service and things. So when I lived in Egypt, it was my first time ever experiencing Ramadan and, you know, being a non-Muslim in a place where everyone was fasting all day. I decided to go ahead and try it just to, you know, for the sense of community. And one of the things that they did when people were breaking their fast, there were all of these different types of specialty drinks and snacks. And one of them is called Amreddin, which is basically dried apricot puree that you just mix with water and you have as a drink. And so I got some dried apricots from the store and I pureed them. But because, you know me, I like to add things. So I added some non-alcoholic sparkling fake wine to it to make a little drink for myself. Remember that stuff I gave your kids at the party?
Yes,
fake
I do.
Sparkling wine.
I meant to take some home. That sounds delicious. You know, I feel like the options for non-alcoholic drinks have just exploded in recent years. You go out to a restaurant, there's a whole non-alcoholic section. And I have to say, I wish those had been around when I was pregnant, you know, 10 plus years ago. It would have been nice to have more options, but I'm here for it.
And my sister's asking if I can send her some. Yes, Nikki, I'll send you some. Great. No, but it's really good.
The things we learn from Kimberly.
No, but it was so nice because, like, if you have nothing else in common with somebody else walking down the street at that time of year, you're all hungry and thirsty. And people would set up these big, long tables on the street. And when it came time for people to break their fast, literally anyone could sit down at these tables, no questions asked, and get a meal served to them to break the fast. And they called them tables of mercy. And it was such a nice, charitable thing. And so you ended up just sitting down with people who were parked their cars and got out because they happened to be stuck in traffic when they're breaking their fast. So anyway, happy Ramadan to everybody who's celebrating. And
Ramadan.
Amreddin.
That sounds very
should
good.
It's actually quite tasty, I must say. Okay, so let's do
let's
the
have
news.
Some news. You go for it, Kimberly.
Yeah, so I've got all sorts of just DC politics stuff right now. First of all, a CNN exclusive that just came out this afternoon, which is the January 6th committee is discovering more and more about the communications that went down on the day of the attack on the Capitol. And lots of different messages we heard before about Clarence Thomas' wife, Jenny Thomas, exchanging text messages with Mark Meadows. Well, also who is exchanging text messages with Mark Meadows on the day of the attack is Donald Trump Jr. And so CNN has some reporting about text messages that were exchanged, which says where basically he was saying, or at least it seems he was saying, Trump Jr.'s people are saying it may not have been him, it may have been a forwarded message, that It's very simple, Trump Jr. texted to Meadows on November the 5th, adding later in the same missive, we have multiple paths, we control them all. So sorry, this was actually around the election rather than January 6th. I'm getting my stories mixed up today. But there were a lot of communications about, you know, this all leads to whether or not multiple people were working together to try to overturn the election or to change the election results. And so the CNN story, I'm reading here, the November 5th text message outlines a strategy that is nearly identical to what allies of the former president attempted to carry out in the months that followed. Trump Jr. makes specific reference to filing lawsuits and advocating recounts to prevent certain swing states from certifying their results, as well as having a handful of Republican state houses put forward slates of fake Trump electors. So
wow.
This is an ongoing story. I think that there's so much going on. It's easy to kind of ignore the deluge of information that's coming out from this committee. But this was a really crucial time for our democracy, and how this gets prosecuted and how this gets dealt with is really important. My other one is related, and this is why I was getting the dates mixed up in my head. Today, Charles Donahoe, who was one of the leaders of the Proud Boys, who, you know, was one of the people sort of charging into the Capitol, helping to break the windows and organizing a lot of the things. He pled guilty today to conspiracy to obstruct Congress during the January 6th riot at the Capitol. And he has reached a plea deal with the government. I'm reading from my good buddy Kyle Cheney's piece here in Politico. A plea deal with the government that includes cooperation with prosecutors, a potentially pivotal victory for the Justice Department in one of the most significant cases to emerge from the January 6th insurrection. He pleaded to two charges, including conspiracy to obstruct Congress's proceedings, as well as to impeding police officers. And so they're really sort of tightening... I hate the tightening the noose language. But anyway, they're really sort of circling in on the people who were organizing the attack and the riot. And people are being charged. People are being prosecuted. People are pleading guilty. And it's happening. So it's ongoing.
Yeah.
That's what I got.
I just think about all the work that goes into these investigations to make a case, and all the hours and man hours, they still say, of investigative work and documentation. Yeah. And it's ongoing, right? I mean, they have lots more people to kind of continue.
Hundreds of people. Prosecuting. Hundreds of people are being investigated and prosecuted. And, you know, that's going to be going on for quite some time, I think.
Yeah. Well, mine is a little bit... outside the Beltway, but certainly political. You know, we've talked about this before. Today, Alabama Governor Kay Ivey signed two bills into law that restrict the rights of transgender youth. The first criminalizes treatments known as gender-affirming health care, which include medications known as puberty blockers that are reversible but delay puberty for children who are in early puberty, as well as hormone therapy, which allows older teenagers to medically transition. And I should say they're supported by every relevant medical association as appropriate treatments for transgender youth. According to Politico, Alabama is now the first state to mandate prison time for anyone who provides these treatments to minors. Prison time up to 10 years.
This is the doctors, right?
Yes. And Tennessee and Arkansas have both passed laws restricting access to health care. One of them is tied up in court. And the ACLU says it's going to sue to block this law in Alabama, too. But this is definitely a bigger step towards criminalizing this health care that is, again, supported by major medical associations. And then the second bill that they passed and was signed today is going to sound familiar, because it requires school children to use the bathroom that corresponds to the sex on their birth certificate, even if that conflicts with their gender identity. And that law, there was language, an amendment added at the last moment that also prohibits classroom discussion on sexual orientation or gender identity between kindergarten and fifth grade. So it's very much like what has been called the Don't Say Gay or Trans bill in Florida. You know, I'm not going to get into the politics, but what I've been interested in and in looking into for our programs is that this is very much an economic story. For a couple of reasons. One is, you know, for these providers who've been practicing the standard of care and advocating for some of the most vulnerable children in our society and now face prison time, it's, you know, it's a really difficult moment. And as you know, I recently talked to families in Texas where similar policies have been put into place non-legislatively. And they're moving or have moved or considering moving out of the state because of this, these policies. And, of course, not everyone can afford to do that. A lot of businesses, I think you've talked about this on the show, a lot of businesses are coming out and saying, look, these anti-LGBTQ laws make it really hard for us to recruit in your state. And we think about this kind of thing when we think about where to invest. And now I think more than 230 large companies have signed the Human Rights Campaign statement saying, you know, we don't support these kind of bills. They're really hard for us to do business. And they're like some of the biggest names you can think of: Apple, Amazon, Accenture, you know, Wells Fargo, from almost every industry, large, large household names. And it'll be interesting, I think, to see if there's more of a backlash because this has become so widespread.
Yeah, I was, you know, as you know, Amy, but maybe folks don't, I also do work with one of our APM programs, Call to Mind, which focuses on mental health. And I was doing an interview today for our upcoming special on youth mental health and the role of school counselors and therapists in schools. And they're worried also because let's say a kid has a mental health crisis in the school and they go to the psychologist or the counselor or the therapist in the school, is that doctor or, you know, mental health care provider violating the law if they counsel a kid who's transgender through with, you know, their industry approved practices? If a kid is struggling with issues around race or ethnic identity and they start talking about it, is that a violation of these laws? And how do they provide their standard of mental health care under the auspices of these laws? And to circle back on what you were saying earlier about sort of the business and economic consequences, I saw this thread from Amy Webb, who's a futurist who we talked to on the tech show quite a bit, and we'll put it on the show page. But she's talking about this bidding war for a government research agency focused on biotech, and all these different communities want this to be based where they are: Boston, Maryland, San Francisco, but also apparently the front runner is Texas. So do you really want to put this big scientific research center that maybe some of the research has to rely on stem cells? And a lot of people have a problem with that. Will the top scientists in the country feel comfortable moving to Texas given these restrictive laws? And so, you know, it's not just the private industry that we have to think about whether or not, you know, it's going to work out for them. It's also government and where these government contracts and facilities go as well. So it's going to have a lot of ripple effects.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And it's just creating more divisions in our country of where people feel safe. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, on that happy note, let's go ahead and play our game.
Yeah, it's probably time for a game, right?
Yeah, it's probably time for a game. Okay, this week, sorry, I've got like chunks of apricot happening. This week, we are going to play the game This or That, hosted by our wonderful always Drew Jostad. And Amy, we're just going to say which one of the things that we like. And I'm going to let you go first every time.
Oh, no.
Okay. Because that's what Kai does to me all the time. So I'm doing it to you. All right, Drew, go ahead.
Gut reactions. Would you rather show up overdressed or underdressed?
Oh, overhand.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, you see, you're answering. I would say overdressed. I've definitely been the underdressed one, and that's a bad feeling.
Amy, you saw me at my party. You know I'll always go overdressed.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, I'm usually underdressed. So, just not in public. That's been one of the only good things about the pandemic is I can just be, you know. I grew up in a state known for underdressing. Like Colorado, you can walk into the fanciest restaurant in jeans and your, you know, fleece vest and you'll be fine. So it's hard to shake that.
This is interesting. There's like universal overdressed throughout. Mm. I mean, I guess we've discovered the core demographic component of the Make Me Smart audience. Everybody overdresses for parties. All right. What's the next one?
But I wonder how fancy everyone is dressed right now. Hopefully.
But we're not out.
There's a little of both.
All right.
All right. If you could, would you rather be able to time travel or teleport?
Ooh, teleport. I hate flying. And time travel is just too dangerous. Too dangerous. Somebody always messes something up that they never really resolve in the plot. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with teleportation as well, just because I really don't want to get into the paradoxes. And there's not a whole lot of places in history, at least, that are going to be particularly great for me. And I don't know what's ahead in the future either. So I'm gonna stay right here.
Stay right here. I wonder how bad teleportation is for the climate, though. I'd have to find that out.
I think it would be better because fewer people would be flying.
I'm sure these are carbon neutral technologies.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, we had to just verify that.
Speaking of which, would you rather take a road trip or fly in a plane?
Oh, God. Oh, man. You know, I have done two very long road trips the past couple of summers with my family. And so right now, I'm kind of leaning toward air travel, despite what I just said about not enjoying flying and being, you know, terrified of climate change. But yeah, if I had to choose right this minute, definitely fly.
I'm torn because I love a good road trip, but a lot of the places I want to go, you need to fly. So I'm going to say fly just because most of the places I want to go at this particular juncture in my life are quite far away.
And you're not so into the ferry.
I mean, would I take a transatlantic steamer to get to Europe or one across the Pacific? That's going to take a real long time to get where I'm trying to go.
Yeah, I don't think we get enough vacation time around here.
No, we definitely don't. Fix that marketplace. We want to take a round-the-world cruise. Let's do it.
Next one, do you prefer cake or pie?
Darn it. Pie. I'm going to go with pie. I like them both, though. I'll admit it. See, with half full, half empty, you can kind of like find a middle ground, but you can't with this or that. It's like you have to choose. So I'm going pie.
I'm going pie as well. But which pie, Amy?
Blackberry.
Ooh.
Yeah. My mom, we used to go blackberry picking when I was growing up, and my mom would bake these delicious pies. And so I have fond feelings for the blackberry pie. But I also really like pumpkin pie. I make one every Thanksgiving. How about you?
Well, I do like a good sweet potato pie, which is effectively a pumpkin pie, but just not.
I often put a sweet potato in my pumpkin pie. So, yes.
Do you? That's interesting.
Yeah, it sets up really well if you do that. Yeah, Cook's Illustrated.
So, okay. I also love a good apple pie. I went through a period of like stress baking all of the time, and I like made my own pie crust, you know, use vodka in the pie
crust.
You
and like everyone in the country.
No, this was not even during the pandemic. This was like long before for other reasons.
You make it sound like you went through this private experience. I think the whole nation did that. But
this was a pre-pandemic stress baking stint, but I was making all my own pie crust and making the mix and everything like that. And also my grandma used to make pumpkin pie. So I think our pies always have like nostalgia attached. What about you, Drew? What kind of pie do you like?
I'll stick with the pumpkin pie myself. Next topic is TV or movies?
That's gotten harder in recent years. Yeah. I'm going to surprise myself and say TV because I don't have time for a full 2 hours anymore. So I like small doses. And I just think there's so much excellent television that I can't possibly keep up with it.
I love that
you
said
video.
You need it in small.
Let's just put it that way.
I love that you said you need it in small doses because me watching TV still ends up being like 2.5 hours or longer. TV.
Yeah, well, I pretend
and streaming
to do it in
video.
Small doses.
TV streaming video has become just so good, and there's so much good content out there. So I'm definitely going to go with that.
Yeah.
Okay. And
I still love the movies, though. I always will.
Would you rather try to survive a zombie outbreak or an alien invasion?
Who comes up with these? I can't believe you're still making me go first. I think aliens, because there's always the possibility that they'll be cool, you know? Zombies, I think there's really no scenario where, like, we're going to be okay. Unless I become a zombie.
So, I, like, have a deep terror of zombies. I can't watch zombie movies. They give me nightmares. It's real bad. But I still would probably go for zombies over aliens because if he said alien invasion, I think. And if they're aliens.
That implies hostility.
And they made it. And they made it here, that means they're already smarter than us and have more advanced technology. And if they've invaded, probably not on a good side. And even if they did maybe have altruistic intentions, they'd probably take one look at us and how we're treating our planet and each other and be like, you know what? No, you don't get admission to the galaxy team. So I'm not super confident that aliens would smile upon us. So I'm going to go with zombies and hope that I have a really good bunker. And, you know, this is why I used to take martial arts class and then I keep my throwing knives and I've got my little stash of canned goods.
You're
for
ready.
The win. Oh, boy.
Well, that was fun.
I'm gonna try not to have zombie nightmares tonight.
Seriously.
Okay, that is it for us today. I will be off next week. I'm going on vacation with the sister who's in the chat right now. And next week, Kai is going to be back with Mariel Segarra. If you have questions for them or any other thoughts about zombies versus aliens or whatever else comes to mind, you can go ahead and send them our way. You can send us a voice memo or an email at makemesmart@marketplace.org. Or you can leave us a voice message. We are at 508-827-6278, a.k.a. 508-UB-SMART. Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera and Marque Green. Our intern is Tiffany Bowie. And today's episode was engineered by the amazing Drew Jostad. And our senior producer is Bridget Bodner.
The team behind our game, This or That, is Stephen Bean, Mel Rosenberg, and Emily McCune. The theme music for the game was written by our very own Drew Jostad. And the director of On Demand is Donna Tam.
Drew can just do everything.
Multiple
oh, they're
credits.
Saying, Margie says in the chat that she loves you. They said, love you, Amy, with the heart.
Oh, thank you. Bye.
Bye.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.